At Monmouth Park Racetrack, the 2019 racing season is all about more. More purse money, more stakes races, more racing days, more ways to make money. With live racing currently Saturday and Sunday, Monmouth Park offers both an early and late 50-cent pick five with just 15% takeout. First post is 12:50 Eastern. This summer season, make Monmouth Park your best bet. And check out the new monmouthpark.com for even more. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show number 45. We are recording it Wednesday night, May 22nd. This is our late week show for the week following the Preakness. I am your host, Peter Thomas Fornital. Happy to be back with you coming from the Brooklyn Bunker once again. And we got a pretty fun show lined up. A little bit later, we're going to be hearing from Jake Ballas of Black Type Thoroughbreds. And after that, Brian Skirka from Monmouth Park. We've got some handicapping, Monmouth, Churchill Downs, Woodbine, and Santa Anita a little bit later. But first, I'm going to introduce my co-host, and we're going to do a little Ask ITM and a little housekeeping as well. And as for that co-host, you know who I'm talking about. He's the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
PTF, what's going on?
I'm just chilling. I've been podcasting for a lot of hours today, and I'm trying to figure out what my life is going to look like. You know, my brother, Mark Fornital, getting married in Piedmont next week. So I'm going to be on the road and over in Italy. So I want to pre-record a few things, and then we can tack on a few segments. DJ Unstable, coming out of retirement, he's willing to help us out. So the show should continue unabated. We'll see if we can somehow figure out how to get all four shows done next week. It might require a little extra flexibility from you. Not that you're not always flexible, but just be warned. It's the craziness is going to continue next week.
Isn't our friend Quincy Jones the person who gave us the national anthem bet for the Super Bowl? Isn't he over there somewhere in that side of the world?
He is. He is in Lake Como, I believe. I do not think our paths are going to cross. I do know he set an alarm to wake up at 2 a.m. to watch the Preakness, though. Such a sicko is he. Wonder how that went over with his significant other.
His significant other gets down, so it's probably worked out.
Oh, the family that gambles together stays together, or something like that, something like that. I want to talk about some of the stuff that you've got going on. Oh, one other quick tease. It does look like one of those shows next week is going to be a long-form interview with Barry Meadow, whose new book just hit the shelves, The Skeptical Handicapper. Did you ever read the original classic Meadow book about money management?
I did. It's like a yellow, like
yes.
Yes.
It has a very self-published-y look. It's from the day, but don't judge a book by its cover.
No, it kind of was like, I believe it came out before Steve Crisp's book, Exotic Betting.
Oh, but by a wide margin. Yeah.
And it covered a lot of those same topics. A lot of the ABC concept of you know, weighting your opinion and having more on this than you have on that. So I do remember that book.
It's a great one. And this is done in partnership in a lot of ways with Ken Massa of HTR. So there's a massive amount of data queries that go into putting this book together. I'm really eager to talk to him about it and continue the discussion about ways that horse players can use data. And our newest partner, Stats Racelens, we're going to be talking about them a little bit later in the show. They're going to come up in an answer to one of our Ask ITM questions. Reading this book, I think, is going to give people ideas of the way they can use that product as well. But really, just looking forward to talking to Barry, legendary gambler. You know, I'm a big respect the elders guy anyway. All these people who I read and learned from when I'm coming in the game, I always relish the opportunity to sit down and talk with them. We should have a good hour, I think, with Barry, 45 or an hour. That will be the early week show next week to keep me from having to do a show when totally jet lagged. That's the plan anyway, as it stands. Now, what do you have coming up work-wise in terms of your TV appearances? You know, for a while there, you were rivaling Matt Bernier. You were TV's Jonathan Kinchin. You've been quiet for a while, but I heard a little rumor, And, you know, any spies listening shouldn't get too excited. But I heard a little rumor you're going to be on TV a whole lot in the coming weeks and months.
I heard you with the spy comment. I am heading back to the motherland of Dallas, Texas. I'm going back for Lone Star. They've got a three-year-old Philly turf race, and they've hooked up with the guys at NYRA and Fox Sports and America's Day at the Races to have me there to cover that. Probably do a hit with the cross country pick five, something like that. And then I haven't seen it released yet, but there's also supposed to be another racetrack that is going to be covered on this Monday and many, many days moving forward. But because I haven't seen it released yet, I can't say it out loud yet. I'm sure it's coming somewhere, or you'll just find out on Monday what racetrack that's going to be that is going to be covered on the Fox Sports networks moving forward. So looking forward to getting back to Dallas. Always a lot of fun. And they actually have, and I hope it's not too late. If you hear this, jump online as soon as you can. Reach out to Brandon Lee at Lone Star Park. But they're having a free $2 win place contest that leads into their next live money contest. So I think the top 5 to 10, I don't want to say exactly, people in the $2 win place will win a $1,000 entry into their live money contest that takes place a little bit later this year. So definitely a great day to be there. Two birds, one stone.
That's great. And Brandon was on the show talking in advance of the previous contest. They ended up doing, from what I understand, some really strong business. Don't know if they were record numbers or not in terms of money wagered for their contest, but I would imagine it would have gone close if it didn't do that. And this seems like another good opportunity for horse players. As for you potentially talking out of school about this gig on Monday, be careful, JK. You don't want to get sacked before things really get started here.
But no, the Monday Lone Star, I'm good on that one. It's the and Belmont will be covered. It's the other racetrack that I think is going to be covered is the one that they've been waiting to debut, and that's the one that I don't want to get fired for saying that one too early.
Fingers crossed on that. Now, we have been remiss. We mentioned our T-shirt briefly on another show, but we haven't really been talking about it enough. I probably need to create one of those bumper reads to put at the beginning and end of the shows, but I'm really pleased with this shirt, the I'm Alive and the Pick Five shirt. If you're interested in picking it up, you can simply go to whereimfrom.com. That is the T-shirt maker that we've partnered with, and I love their stuff in general. I think it's really a very strong collection. They've got an exclusive deal with Baker Mayfield. They've got all kinds of cool stuff. But if you want our shirt, which of course you do, just use the search function and search for Pick Five.
And if we can get this shirt rolling, right, we can come up with some other good ones. We can get maybe a Crush Your Soul or Crush Your Soul shirt. We can get a what else can we get? You Can Find Me in the Paddock Bar shirt. We can get a this one might be a little bit controversial at the moment. He hasn't been well received for some of his behavior in the last 6 months or so. But Paco for President, we could try to get that one going. There's a lot.
On the front it says hello and welcome, and on the back it says may you win all your photos. Come on,
that's a good one. And how about JK Tries Math Fails?
Oh, I want that one. I might just wear that every day. I might get 40 of them so I can wear it every day at the paddock bar. I guess I could get 7 and clean them, but I might just get 40. It's easier up there. If you are on that site and you use the promo code PICK5, you will get a 20% discount. Not sure if that's just on our shirt or on your order. We'll let you figure that out, but it's whereimfrom.com. Check it out. There's a lot of great stuff over there. Yep, for doing a few Ask ITM questions, JK, before we bring in the guests and then do some handicapping?
Let's do it.
All right. Here is the first one. We had a lot of questions about topical things. That's why I wanted to get to them. And then we also had one general question. Let's do the general question first. Listener Mike has a great Twitter handle, @AllergicToChalk. Says, respects our opinion. He relies on Daily Racing Form for PPs, specifically Formulator with trip notes. Any sense if DRF is struggling overall and maybe not viable long term? Any suggested alternatives to Formulator because of trip notes, etc.? I would say he's asking that question because DRF clearly stripping things down to the bone, presumably looking to sell this year again, and referring to the closing of DRF Press and DRF tournaments. But I think their core product isn't going anywhere. And I think you don't have to worry on the level of, oh, this is going to go away. I don't know. I do know you can export those trip notes. I'm sure if it hits the fan, we will find some way of trying to help people find some way of repurposing those trip notes. But this is something that's very unlikely, I think. I think it's going, Formulator in one form or another is going to be around for a long time. I think you can, it may morph, but I don't think you're in danger of losing those trip notes anytime soon. Now, that said, there are some interesting alternatives in terms of past performance products, and especially in terms of ways, as we were talking before, about putting horse race queries in. And JK, I'm going to let you talk a little bit about our new partners, Stats Racelens, and how you've been using them.
I don't think you have a lot to worry about. And if you do have something to worry about, I really don't know the answer to the best way to worry about it. So maybe an email to customer service of a way that you can maybe download those periodically just to keep them in a folder or a file, or put them in a cloud somewhere and hope that cloud doesn't go out of business. As far as Stats Racelens, I'll be very honest. I think that I always underestimated the product. I think there was a lot of things that it could do that I didn't really know or understand. And when I dove in and started playing with it, I've been pleasantly surprised. In fact, it's kind of a necessary for me now just to look at some things. The two things that I think are the most powerful, if you've never looked or haven't looked, you want to dive deeper and look at some tutorials about it, but there's the angles and then, and there's a research. The angles are situations where you can highlight angles that you have found to be successful, such as horses cutting back from 7 to 6 that were morning line favorites, whatever. You can be alerted when those horses pop up. You could have negative angles that you can be alerted to. So you get kind of a cheat sheet, an entry sheet at the beginning when you first log in, and it will tell you if a horse has 3 negatives, 4 positives. It can be green or red to let you know that there's some things there, and you can kind of dive in. It can lead you to some plays that you might have missed. That's the angles version, and that goes very, very deep. That's the Cliff Notes version of angles. Research is probably a little bit more specific to the race itself and the horses themselves. One of my favorite things to do there is you can look at the dam and you can set some parameters of letting me know every time the dam has had an offspring that's run on wet turf. So if it comes up soft, you can find some angles there. You can find jockeys, which jockeys excel the most going 6 furlongs at Belmont. And you can save those as – you can save it as today's racetrack, today's trip, today's surface, and you can just go back. So anytime you can look to see which jockeys lead going 1 mile and 1/16 at Pimlico, or which jockeys lead going 6.5 down the hill at Santa Anita. And you can sometimes find some clues. You can find some situations that can lead you to horses that are excelling in certain situations. Trainer situations, blinkers off. It's endless. I absolutely love the product as a supplement. Now, my brain still wants to look at the other PPs that I've become accustomed to. And I'm not necessarily encouraging you to move to a different PP. However, I do think that this is more powerful than Formulator is in terms of looking for angles, trainer stats, jockey information. You can't look those things up about the jockeys on DRF Formulator. You can't look to see if Jose or Irad is better with a horse on the lead. You can do that in Stats Racelens, and we'll do some stuff over the next year or so covering a lot of different angles and ways that you can use Stats Racelens to your advantage.
Yeah, we were talking about maybe trying to put together a webinar. Scott Cole's name was bandied about as somebody who obviously used stats to great effect in winning the NHC. And great news for listeners, if you use the promo code STATSITM, you get 30% off all unlimited subscriptions. So we're talking monthly, quarterly, annual. So try it for a month. You get a big fat discount. If you like it, if like JK, it becomes something incorporated into your daily play, you get a you'll be able to learn this new thing, and you get to do so at a discount. And of course, it's also helping us out by supporting one of our partners. So do check it out. More to come on that.
Now, we'll tell you this. Be careful, right? You know, I'm a big believer in, if Netflix is going to let two people log in at once, then go ahead and do it. What you don't want to do is use someone else's login to check it out, start playing around with it, start setting things, because you're going to lose all the stuff you do when you get your own. So if I would be clean about it. If you're going to investigate, spend a couple dollars to make sure you like it, because when you're playing with it and you're putting in angles and you're putting in research and you're doing all these things, it lives on your account in your situation. And you'll be very annoyed if you can't get that when you decide that it's a product that you need to have and you can't transfer it over.
All right, let's move on to a couple of these other topical ones. We didn't talk about the Gary West challenge, JK, that came up. My first reaction was to just be amused by it. And he basically said he would put up, I think it boiled down to, if his horse, Maximum Security, runs against, and he listed several horses, I don't remember who the full run was, he would put up a head-to-head challenge, and he would essentially give odds, $1.8 million for the challenger, $5 million on his side, and if he won, the money would be donated to charity. Specifically, I think it was the Permanent Disabled Jockeys Fund, or certainly a worthy cause. I just thought it was far preferable to do something bold and WWE-like than it was to continue whinging. So on that level, I applauded it. But you had pointed out off-air that you saw some potential problems with it. You want to get into that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been guilty of this before, right? Like when you lose and you're playing Madden with your buddies and you lose and you jump up and you say, play me for 500 then. Play me for 500 then. And, you know they're not going to play you for 500. So then you look like the tough guy because you offered the 500. Like, I just don't see it materializing, right? No one's going to do this, I don't think.
Well, what if it's a race they were going to be in anyway? You think they still might enter the race and not want to do it even with the 2-1 odds?
Well, from what I understand, and I could be wrong, and maybe we should check, I thought the other side has to put up the $5 million too.
I thought, well, that's a big difference.
I don't think it's a free roll.
It's not a free roll, but he said they would have to put up the Derby. It was cheeky. It was the Derby winner purse amount.
So look, so here's the thing. I think whether it's a free roll or it's a straight up head to head bet. First of all, he's not Jonathan and they're not PTF, so I'd be very careful if I was him. the second part about
hey,
is
need I remind you? Never mind.
Keep you going. Have the belt?
At the moment, I do.
That's another video game comeback when someone gets mad. You know, I'm better than you. Well, I have the belt. You're only as good as your last game. That's another thing. I do that to Texas A&M fans all the time. We played football last and we beat them. Here's what I will say is I do believe it causes some integrity issues. I would not want to be alive for a big score in a race where this was taking place.
Explain that a little more. I know I see where you're going, but for the listeners who might not.
Yeah. Well, let's say it's Country House and it's Maximum Security. Country House is going to make more money beating Maximum Security than he is winning the race.
Right.
And so I'm concerned that weird stuff could happen, and it's like they're riding their own race inside of another race, and that to me is like not really something that I would want to be involved in, because I don't really know what to expect there or where to go there, and I just worry about the integrity issues that could come up from a wagering standpoint when that funny business is going on.
It probably won't be happening at all. The other sort of tough guy element of it is match races famously favor the speed horse. You would think Maximum Security would be out in front in whatever race it was. I mean, I wonder if War of Will running so well, and if he were to come back and run well again in the Belmont, if it wouldn't suddenly seem like a proposition that would be appealing to that camp. But mostly, I think this is just something to talk about in a podcast, not something that's actually going to happen, true or false.
True. I mean, it sounds like some wager that I would make. I actually made a silly wager with our friend Craig Burnick on the way back from the Kentucky Oaks. That was definitely mint julep induced. But I made a wager that Serengeti Empress wouldn't win again. And it wasn't because I don't think she's a talented horse. It's just it was kind of a cheeky idea. And so, anyways, I wonder if maybe Gary West had a bottle of wine, but you know, a bottle of wine, and then came up with this idea of revenge. But it seems like it came out in daylight. It was a written release, so obviously it was proofread, and he must mean business.
Well, we'll see what, if anything, happens with that. The last question, and I think we can dispense with this quickly, but I do think it's an important enough issue to talk about in to some degree, is this HBO thing, Jonathan, which I'm sure you've heard about. Am I wrong? I'm not even going to watch it. It's apparently a very frank, real sports thing depicting racing in an unfavorable light. And it sounds like it's not that there aren't some good points made, but there's enough fallacies and enough things that I know I don't want to see baked into the cake here that I'm going to skip it because I don't want to watch a horse snuff film. And while I'm not dismissing that there might be some important things raised, things that we've talked about on the show, I really feel like using Santa Anita as a jumping off point to talk about these other flaws in the business, that is specious. And I'm also disturbed by, as I was with the New York Times piece the other year, of lumping in quarter horse statistics about slaughter with thoroughbred statistics. And I'm uncomfortable. I'm going to skip it. Am I making a mistake? Have you watched it? Do you have any further thoughts? Are you mad at me for even bringing it up?
No, there's a lot of questions. All right. First of all, you and I are different in this regard. We've argued about it, not passionately. We've argued about it before. If there's a snake in the grass, I want to see him. That's why I don't block people. Well, that's why I didn't block people. I just want to know that there's a snake over there. I don't want to act like it doesn't exist. You prefer to not give the snake any attention. And so I understand completely, like the stupid, the pick three boy video, you have not and refused to watch it. I wanted to see it because I wanted to see what those idiots had to say. And so when it comes to this, I wanted to know what the world was seeing. And I wanted to be able to address it when friends or family ask about what they saw. And here's what I'll tell you. It was a desperate attempt at shock journalism.
Okay.
It was they didn't have the other side of the argument. They only had some guy that looks like he has kids buried underneath his house. They had they had like a very upset, small track, small time, probably barely making ends meet vet who was angry. And then they had like some janky old footage from Mountaineer 15 years ago. From an old piece that they did. If you haven't seen it and you're squeamish, I wouldn't watch it because it shows at least 20 thoroughbreds dying. It shows horses hanging upside down like in a slaughter. It's awful. It's just shock. It's a PETA video. It looks like a PETA video. And for an established and quality program in what is real sports, and Bernie, who usually does a good job, and whichever one of the Gumbel brothers is the host, like it's right. Normally a really good show. The piece after was about a girl who plays in the WNBA and how she doesn't go play summer ball to make money. She spends time at home with her disabled sister who has autism and is blind and deaf. And it's like this sweet story followed just like junky shock journalism of showing 20 horses dying, trying to push your agenda. The only person that resembled the other side was the Jockey Club. They had a representative from the Jockey Club who just expressed their desire to see change. They had a French trainer on that says that in her extensive career training, she's never had a horse die. I call BS. I just do.
She's had fewer than 1,000 horses. Maybe it's possible, but I mean, if it's somebody who's had thousands of horses, I would tend to think that would be very unlikely.
I've told a number of people today, you don't really need to watch it if you don't want to watch it because there's nothing in there groundbreaking. You don't learn anything new. We know we have an issue. We know that equine fatalities are unacceptable. We also accept that they are going to happen. And it's our job to minimize them. And what happened at Santa Anita was unfortunate. And I think that it will propel people into making some changes into getting that corrected. The two guys that were ruled off at Santa Anita, allegedly, what I heard, their stories deserve for them to be ruled off, allegedly. And that's a good thing.
Has that been widely reported, JK? I've heard some racetrack chat about it, but I hadn't seen it in the trades.
I haven't seen – I've heard they were – from what I've seen publicly, ruled off.
Okay.
What I've heard privately was a reason why, and gotcha. The reasons why make sense.
Not taking good care of their horses. Yeah, I mean, I think you could say it had to do with not taking proper care of their horses, which is
– That's a fair summary.
No lawyers are going to come after us. Great assessment. You're making me feel excellent about my decision not to watch it, and I don't think anybody else needs to either. Do you think anybody would, just really quick, would they get it? Would our listeners get anything out of watching it, or should it really just be skipped?
No, you get a stomach ache, and and the good news is that Game of Thrones final season aired Sunday, and I'd imagine a lot of people canceled. So hopefully, not that many people saw it last night on HBO.
Oh my goodness, 13 million watched that along with us. We're going to be talking about that with the big A, Anthony Stabile, on the Naira Betts show this week. All right, good job handling that very thorny topic that I didn't even prep you for. Excellent work, JK. And that covers my list here. I think it's time to bring in our first guest right after this. For 35 years, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation has been dedicated to saving thoroughbred racehorses no longer able to compete on the racetrack from possible neglect, abuse, and slaughter. The oldest and largest charity in the U.S. devoted to racehorses, the TRF makes a promise of lifelong sanctuary to those horses unable to pursue a second athletic career. Unique within the aftercare industry, the horses of the TRF find their second chance in the role of teachers through the TRF Second Chances program, which provides vocational training in 7 correctional facilities across the U.S. The program is Saving Horses and Saving Lives. Learn more at www.trfinc.org, and please use the special In the Money podcast link to donate, trfinc.org/players. So this next segment is a combination of things. We regularly have this guest on the show to talk about what's going on with his operation, as he's one of our proud partners. But it's also a little bit of a preview of the type of content you're going to be finding on our other new show, the In the Ring Pedigree Podcast. Folks interested in chatter like this about the sales, definitely check that out. We've got a lot of cool content there. Looking to go once a week. At least that's the plan for now. And we're having a lot of fun with that. There's a lot, I think, that horse players can learn about the breeding business from listening to the folks on that side of the fence. But now we are going to bring in the man behind Black Type Thoroughbreds, our old pal, Jake Ballas. Jake, how are you today?
I'm great, Pete. Thanks for having me on.
Looked like you had a busy week there in Maryland. I wanted to bring you on to talk about your experience at the sale and specifically this new purchase for Black Type.
Yeah, we were busy. I mean, we could have been busier, I guess, if we bought more than one horse, but we're very excited on the one filly we did get. She's by the Big Beast, and which he's a first-year sire. The horse breathes really well. After going through 600 horses, and all the vetting that took place, and we kind of had our eye on her from the time she breezed. And, we paid $230,000 for her. And so we are really excited. She's going to go to Saratoga. She actually got there this afternoon. George Weaver's going to train her. And it was a long, long several days, and get outbid on some. But she fell right within our price range of what I thought she was going to be. So I don't feel that I stretched and overpaid, which does happen in this game, especially in a bidding war. You get some adrenaline going, and you kind of feel like you don't want to lose out on one that you really like. But you need to be disciplined and hope you don't, put a cap on the most you'll spend and try not to go over that.
Sounds a bit like
we do that with her.
Sounds a bit like gambling in that regard. You can love something, but then you at what price do you love it? And you have to make decisions and go from there. How do you equate the two ideas?
Yeah, that is very similar. You know, because you do fall for one, you know, and your fear is, you know, if you don't get this one, am I going to get another one? Or am I going to get outrun? But you still have to be disciplined. There are two more sales. One's in California. One is in June. You know, so if we didn't get her, we'd be there working. But I think we're going to be full with our 2-year-olds this year. We have three of them. So I'm very excited to get this filly. We have a colt, and then we have a New York bred colt, and now we have a filly. So hopefully at Saratoga we can have three 2-year-olds in three different divisions.
Jake, you know, I've been lucky enough to hang out with you and listen to you talk a little bit about what it is you look for when you go to the sales. But for the listeners that might not have heard it, why don't you kind of walk us through just some of your checklist mentally, you know, when you're looking at one physically and when it comes to the pedigree and maybe some things that you're looking for when you're looking at the workouts when they're in these 2-year-old in training sales.
So the first thing they look at, you're looking at the video of the horse's breeze and, you know, not just the clock, you know, how fast they go, but their action. Is there any wasted action, how they're doing it? We have guys on the backside that are looking at equipment, listening to breathing. So, you know, you could love something and then come back and say, wow, you're making a little whistle. And so you got to cross that off your list. So we start with the videos and we come up with a short list strictly on video work. Then you go around and you look at every one of those horses on your list and knock a bunch off based on, you know, on physicals. They have confirmation issues, you know, too small, too big, you know, swelling in the knee, ankle, et cetera. So you knock horses off that way. The pedigree standpoint at a 2-year-old sale for me is way different than as a yearling. I focus much less on pedigree at a 2-year-old sale. I always say it's a performance-based sale. You can have a most well-bred horse at a 2-year-old sale that breeds is terrible. You're not going to want it. And you have a horse with zero, you know, no pedigree, and you love the horse physically, love the breeze. And that's more important. That's what we're trying to do, is try to get the best athlete. Now, obviously, if they breeze great, pass the vetting, and they have the pedigree, they're going to cost, you know, a lot more money than horses with no pedigree. But it is a performance-based sale. So the pedigree is not nearly as important for us. Now, saying that, we do, you know, the bottom side, if there's a older mare that's had 10 horses of racing age and none have won or no black type, I would probably stay away from that type. The odds are against you. So pedigree does come and play a little bit that way. And then once we start going, get the list of the horses that we like, the video work, physicals, we come up with that short list. I'll send the videos to Angel Cordero on the computer and have him go through the videos to get his opinion of which ones he likes the best, and then we'll rank them from there and then rank them based on our budget. And then we'll go do the vet work, and that's going to knock off half the horses usually, if not more, you know, with just issues you don't want to deal with or we're not comfortable dealing with. And then once you end up with, you know, however many, 5, 6, 7, 3, whatever you come up with, and then you hope they fall into your price range without going over your budget. So it does take a lot of time. It's a lot of work. And then that just kind of summarized it. I hope I did that in a good way.
It's great.
That's kind of our process.
So specifically, I know what comes next. I know that then you get on group texts with your friends and start coming up with names. But when you this big beast filly, the filly that you just got yesterday, that you're going to be looking to take on some partners on. I love the big beast, by the way. I thought some of his races were just absolutely phenomenal. One of my favorite races of all time, if you hop on YouTube to get you in the big beast mode, is the Vanderbilt back in 2015, where Johnny Velasquez dropped the whip and was using the goggles to encourage him, and he just barely got beat by Rockfall, but it was one of his best performances ever. But If I wanted to get involved in this big beast filly, say I had $10,000, what would be my steps? What would I do? Do I call you? Do I email? And where does that $10,000 get me? Or what are we going to do about bills? Obviously, these conversations can get a little bit more in depth when you have people that are interested. But a quick overview for those who might be interested.
Yeah, you can go to the website blacktietv.com. Send me an email, and I'll respond to that. My phone number's on there. You're more than welcome to call me. We can go over all the details. If you have the $10,000, you'll buy a share into the horse. The bills are going to be included for 1 year. And hopefully the horse would win a race, hit the board. So you're getting the income. So there won't be a cash call, but there won't be one for the first year. That will all be up front. And we can go over all the other little details. Once just send an email to me, I'll call you. And, hopefully we'll get a big group together when we're at Saratoga before they run, and I'll take care of all the tickets and get everybody on the backside and see the horse, talk to George, and et cetera. But the easiest way is just get on the website or call me at 713-540-9000. You can send me a text, call me, or email.
I got to ask you about that phone number, Jake, because it's so unusual. It's like a business's phone number. It's actually one of the only cell numbers I've ever heard that can be remembered. How did you arrange to have an actual memorable cell number?
When I was in college, I switched phone numbers. And I went to the Verizon store and I asked the guy behind the counter if I can pick my number. And he said no. Even though I can't do that, I said, well, I want something that ends in 1,000 or, all eights or something very easy. But he just said, come behind the counter, and he just was scrolling through a bunch of available numbers. And so I saw 9,000. I just went ahead and got it, which has been everybody always comments on that.
The best part about this story is I could 100% see Jake being like, let me pick my number. And he's like standing behind the counter and he's hanging out with the guy. Oh, it's very funny.
That's ridiculous.
But I will say one more thing about this filly, and what I should have mentioned it earlier, but what we look at is we do look at the stride length on horses, and her stride length was 24.9 feet. And on that particular day, the average for the fillies was 23.2 feet. So it was a big difference on her stride length. And I don't need – big stride. So, I mean, I know the exact footage. I can just tell that. But I was interested. Once we got that, it was kind of interesting to compare to all the other horses. And she did have the, the co-fastest work, and then the second fastest eighth after the wire work, as well as the second fastest quarter after the wire. So hopefully that means she'll be able to run fast for just carry her speed a little bit. And we do know we're getting a sprinter. We're not acting like we just bought a Kentucky Oaks horse. But we do think we have a very fast horse, and she had no vet issues for us. And hopefully we'll be able to run early at Saratoga and have a fun 2-year-old year.
You can make plenty of money with sprinters, that's for sure. You mentioned the other 2-year-olds. Do you have shares available in them, or are those fully booked? And this filly is the one right now you're still available to bring in some partners on.
Those two are fully booked. This one, there are shares available on her. And so if you are interested, please reach out. I can go over all the details with you. And if they want to reach out to either one of you guys, and y'all put them in touch with me. If they don't, if we can't remember the website, that's fine too.
We're happy to help. We're happy to be members in this tangential way of the Black Type team. And we look forward to seeing you have success at Saratoga and beyond. Jake, thanks so much for taking time out today. JK, did you have one more before we let the big man out of here?
He needs to give us 0.5% for free, because essentially all I do is win grade ones as an owner. So I don't know why you wouldn't want to have me involved.
0.5% for you guys is done.
I don't know how we keep stepping in this stuff and getting involved with these good horses, JK, but I'm happy you're brazen enough to ask for this crazy stuff. I'll happily ride the coattails. All right, Jake, thank you so much. We will be talking soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, JK, it's handicapping time. We're going to be having this segment presented by our new sponsor, Stats Racelens. Go to their website. What is their URL, by the way? Do you have it in front of you?
You know, I actually don't. What I always do is I just go to Equibase because that's always easy. It's easy. My always pre-populates on my search bar, and I just click Stats Racelens, and right in the top, it's right there in the middle. You can't miss it.
That works. And Stats ITM, you get a 30% discount on any of their unlimited plans. I would advise dipping your toe in the water, starting with the monthly, and going from there. I'm going to be hearing a lot more about Stats Racelens as we go forward. And the first race we're going to talk about today is the Greenwood Stakes at Woodbine. I feel like we should have had Tommy Massis on to talk about Greenwood, the track where he spent so many of his formative years. And I've heard a lot of good horse player stories from the likes of him and Ray Arsenault. It's cool that they're naming this stake after the old location. This race is on the synthetic. It is a 6-furlong sprint. The return to the races of Pink Lloyd, who put together that big string of wins last year. Is it going to be Pink Lloyd, or is it going to be one of these others in the Greenwood Stakes?
Well, our buddy we had on earlier, those Ask ITM question, allergic to chalk. You better grab some Claritin or some Zyrtec. look, I was looking at this horse, Pink Lloyd. Very interesting, right? He's won at every distance. Sorry, every sprint distance, 6, 6.5, 7. He's run at 6 furlongs 14 times, and he's won 13 of them. And he's undefeated off a layoff, and he's undefeated second off of a layoff. He's going to get a good inside trip. He's tactical enough. He can be forward. He'll sit right in behind all those horses, produce one run. I just don't see how the other ones beat it. He's entirely too classy. His figures are faster than most. He's the only one I need in this race.
Shine on, you crazy diamond, for JK in the Greenwood Stakes at Woodbine. I did want to ask you about one more horse before we move on the time form ratings. Sable Island is actually the highest rated horse in the race. What are your thoughts about Sable Island's chances of pulling the upset?
Well, like I mentioned with Pink Lloyd, that horse has never lost off of a layoff. Sable Island has never won off of a layoff. As a 2-year-old, the first start ran second. Came back in April of the 3-year-old year, ran third, then eighth. And now he comes in off 188-day layoff. Sure, absolutely on figures, he's quality enough to do so. But I want the horse that I know who's going to perform well. No workout reports up at Woodbine. And what I've always heard is that it's hard to get fit training on a synthetic track, even though if you're going to be running on one. It's so harder to get fit for these horses. So I don't see how this one's going to get fit enough to give Pink Lloyd the second career loss out of 15 starts going 6 furlongs.
All right. I'd make a joke. If we ever did politics on this show, I'd make a joke about the name of the trainer on the 3. But since we don't, I'm going to go ahead and skip that. And we're going to move on to Churchill Downs. A couple of stakes races we're going to talk about here, starting with race 4, an overnight stake, the Kirtana. And it's not the longest field in the world, but it is a stakes race, and we've got enough to talk about, I think, that it's worth a minute of our time. How did you see this one?
Another Claritin race, another Zyrtec race. but for good reason here. I don't know what the price is going to be. I'm not really sure because there's no morning lines yet. But there's a horse that shows up here by the name of Gaining. And if you look at Gaining's last race, he's obviously trained by trained by Brad Cox, ridden by Florent Giroux. The last race was at Keeneland on a yielding surface, was seventh early of that race. And she was defeated by a filly that was loose. And that filly was Ikki Masho, who was one of the most impressive winners last weekend at Pimlico. A filly that is, forwardly placed and super impressive during that race at Pimlico. She was never losing that race. Gaining was gaining into that slow pace last time. I think she'll be extremely tough here in this spot. She's drawn perfectly well. She'll save a little bit of ground. If you look at the time form U.S. figures, her 119 last time is faster than any of these have ever sniffed recently or in the past. I guess Peru, who comes out of the same race, was a little bit closer to the 119. I don't see how Gaining gets beat here. If another horse beats her, I'm not going to be able to find that horse. So I would single in early picks and things like that.
Not concerned about the pace. I mean, I would almost be concerned about the pace, but I do like the fact that on time form, at least, you've got the one and the six potentially tangling early. And the other thing that gives me confidence that Gainan can still get it done is, while that was theoretically a setup according to pace figures that should have flattered maybe a late run a little bit, really not that slow when you look at being 4.5 lengths off a red-coated 132 early. Maybe Gainan will just be in the perfect spot anyway, but I did want to just clarify if you had any concerns about that. Because I think if Gainan gets beat, it would be the pace.
I completely agree. The pace is always a tricky situation. Here's what I'll say. You're right. There doesn't seem to be a lot of pace in the race. The one overthinking, the six gentle ruler, or the two that Timeform US suggests that will be forward. Neither one of those horses has ever been on the lead in the first two calls of any race. So the fact that, like, I'm supposed to now expect that they're going to be aggressively ridden, tactically get to the front, have, you know, they're going to, you know, shut off after being asked to get there, and then outfinish a horse that I think is clearly better on figures and on class and on previous trip. I can't find my way there. All I need is Gainan.
All right. I like it. Let's move on to the grade three winning colors much later in the card. This goes as race 10 at 5:26. How did you see this one?
You know, this is a really tough race. And I kind of gravitated towards a horse that was mentioned on the show, Awestruck. Obviously, she's likely to be favored here and should take a lot of money. She won on Derby Day. Those horses, the names get remembered. A lot of people were paying attention, and she'll probably be bet back here in 22 days since her last race. But a horse that I thought was pretty interesting was a horse coming in off a 265-day break and a trainer change, and that's Classy Act. You know, we saw Classy Act last year. She was participating in the Kentucky Oaks Trail. She ran in the Rachel Alexandra, the Fairgrounds Oaks, and then also in the Kentucky Oaks. And then they did the old move where you give up on the two-turn dreams and you start the cutback. And she ran well going seven here at Churchill. She won in her first race back with a 120 time form. She comes back at Belmont going 6.5 and goes 121. And then she just kind of goes sour after the test and the prior S. And then for whatever reason, there is a switch from Brett Calhoun, who has a great relationship with the owner, Carl Moore. I believe he actually won a Breeders' Cup race with him. So the switch to Joe Sharp is interesting. You know, Biskitza shows up here. The horse can finish. The horse obviously has some class with the ability to be involved in some of those two-turn races. And I think she could be one that's going to be a little bit forgotten coming into this race. And she's drawn in a good position. She should be able to sit right in behind the speed, if not get out there on the front end. She might have learned her lesson over the last 265 days about being so aggressive. I don't think she necessarily has to be on the lead, but she'll definitely get into a good position if she is forward.
You hearing anything about how she's doing?
I'm not. You know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of workout information when it comes to the Kentucky racetracks. DRF will do something usually for Keeneland. DRF will usually do something leading into Churchill. Those are kind of where I restrict myself when it comes to looking at workout reports. But I think if you're playing in, you know, the race itself, Exactus Tries, the tote board should give you a clue on how the horse is doing. But I think the horse makes a ton of sense with some back class now as a four-year-old. Should have probably grown up quite a bit. Obviously got a lot of time off. It has had a lot of works leading up to this, right? Kind of got back going, I think, maybe in early March, and has just been kind of consistently getting around there. And I think she's going the right direction.
You make a compelling case. I'll just cast a tepid vote for Divine Queen in here. I just thought she might trip out. Obviously, way too deep last time, 75-1 in the grade one, back in a field where I'd like to think you're going to get a decent price. And with a lot of speed signed on, one who I think wants to run through the lane, and maybe that'll help. That's just another I'd consider including in your exotics. And with that, we'll move on to a couple of races at Santa Anita. Our schedules, unfortunately, are not going to allow us to talk about the Gold Cup, which is a Monday race. Unfortunately, it's just not going to draw till Friday. I'm going to be halfway out of the country by then, so we're not going to be able to do anything with that. But we do have, there are three stakes races at Santa Anita. Do you want to look at all of them, or do you want to just look at the grade twos?
No, we can do all three of them. There's the Grade 3 Daytona that I think used to be run at 6.5 down the hill, but they're obviously not doing that at the moment. So we'll hit that going a quick 5 furlongs, and then we've got the Grade 2s on the dirt. We can get to it a little bit later.
Take it away, my friend. Who's your view in the Daytona?
Well, I think it's interesting that Kenthaka shows up here. You know, he's always one of those horses that was kind of two turns, and he ended up being a good sprinter. But I don't know much about where he's going to come from as a turf horse. He kind of comes from out of it. Time form suggests that the pace isn't going to be entirely fast. I don't really like closers going 5, especially horses that look like 7 furlong types. Don't fall in love with the name just because you recognize it. What's on the agenda is going to be my top pick. Time form has the horse loose. He's won sprinting at Santa Anita before. Obviously, it was down the hill, but he's been competitive going 5 before. They thought enough of him to get him into a race at Keeneland last time, going 5.5 with a little bit of cut in the ground. And not sure he loved that. But the two races down the hill this year at Santa Anita with the 121 and the 125 forwardly placed down the hill trips, I think he could be extremely tough. Gets one of my favorite jockey names to say in the world, Agapito Delgadillo.
It's a nice one.
Drawn outside, gets to check out what's going to happen here. I think what's on the agenda could be extremely tough with what looks like a pretty good pace advantage.
Let's fast forward to race 7, the Grade 2 Whittingham. Old friend turns up here, JK. Ashley loves Sugar, the 8-year-old warrior. Will it be his day or one of his rivals?
I'll tell you what, I always get excited when I see a World Horse Players Tour alumni horse showing up. I feel like I've said Ashley loves Sugar 197,000 times, and probably 194,000 times I've assumed that Ashley loves Sugar was a girl.
I was going to make that joke if you didn't.
So I appreciate them. I appreciate them, making it as complicated as possible for me. Look, I think Prime Attraction coming back here is interesting. I know that he was prime, no pun intended, sitting on a big race last time. He's tactical going 1.25 miles. He's had some races over his time that suggest that shouldn't be an issue. He ran 2nd in the John Henry going 1.25 miles, and he'll be out there loose. And I think that Kent is dangerous on the front end when he finds himself there. I think the surface last time at Churchill, the competition at Churchill probably were a little bit too tough. Prime Attraction makes the most sense to me. We had, fortunate enough, if you haven't had a chance to listen to our In the Ring Pedigree podcast that we've also been recording. I'll be rooting for United a little bit. Our buddy Alex Solis came on and was gracious enough to share. LNJ Foxwoods has that one for Richard Mandela. Nice figure last time, going a little bit shorter, but the Giants Causeway makes me feel like a little bit further along wouldn't be a problem for that one. So I think that one could present a little bit of value. Nice time form figures there. Last time, 118. There could be an improvement with that extra ground. But my top pick is going to be Prime Attraction.
Okay. Makes perfect sense with that pace advantage potentially. Let's move on to the Grade 2 Triple Bend, going 7 on the main. Who gets us out here?
This is going to be a workout report race for me. There's two horses that obviously I have contracts based on their trainer to be interested in wagering on. And that would be American Anthem for Bob Baffert, who came back at Churchill and had a really nice figure, ran well that day, going the 1-turn mile and is going to cut back to the 7. And then also Nero, the horse that I probably bet the most money on and never seemed to win. Nero leading up to the Malibu was like the freaky workhorse type. And I know he's always kind of had some issues with, not physical issues, but mental issues with, he's the horse that was famously ridden at Del Mar by Martin Garcia, where it feels as if someone pulled the horse up, or it might have been the horse, it might have been Martin. And he's always just kind of been quirky since then. He's got the job done. He's drawn better than American Anthem. I'm going to try to get out of this race with one of those two. It's Bob Baffert. It's 7 furlongs. It's a graded stake. One of those two is the one for me. Obviously, you have to be aware of Sistron with John Sadler, who ran extremely well in his first dirt start in quite some time. And he's one that I think could be a little bit dangerous, but I like the fact that Baffert's got two here. He can be aggressive with one of them and be a little bit more passive with the other, and one of them will end up getting a good trip.
So you'll have both on your tickets, and you may press one or the other based on the workout report information that you get a little bit later on.
Whoop, there it is.
All right, JK, you've done enough for one day. I think you're now into your fourth hour of broadcasting. For me, I'm going to go into hour five coming up right now with our next guest. And now I'd like to welcome back to the In the Money airwaves our friend Brian Skirka of Monmouth Park. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Pete. Thanks for having me again.
So you've got a loaded-looking card on Saturday with four stakes races, and you've also got a big deadline coming up. I think we'll start with the latter. Pick your prize. Entries have to be in. You can't leave this to the last minute. You can't be walking up with cash or trying to write a check. You've got to register. Tell people how they can do that and what the deadline is, please.
Yep, so the deadline is Monday, May 27th, Memorial Day. The contest itself is Saturday, June 1st. But because of the nature of this contest, where there's a literal prize board, and obviously the prizes are determined by how many people we get, I don't allow any walk-ups, and you have to be pre-registered by this Monday, May 27th. So to do so, easiest way is probably just to call me. 732-571-6595 is my number. Just call me. I'll fill out all your information. You have to pay the half of the $2,000 is your entry fee, so you have to pay that ahead of time. I can take credit cards. And then the other half for your bankroll, you pay the day of the contest in cash. But easiest way, just give me a call, but I just don't want people to forget. You do have to pre-register for this one by this Monday coming up.
All right. We do not want anybody to be left out in the cold. It's a great opportunity. I would say it's fair to say you can double your bankroll and be in pretty good shape to get something up on that prize board. Is that accurate, would you say?
Yeah, pretty close. I think last year, if I'm not mistaken, the 23rd place finisher, I believe, got an NHC seat. And from his starting bankroll of $1,000, I think he finished with about $2,300.
Okay.
So roughly, you know, if you double your bankroll, you're at least in contention for some sort of prize. You're right there in shouting distance. So you certainly don't have to, get too crazy here to be in a position to win an NHC seat. It's pretty much one for 10 or close to it. Last year we had 205 entries and 20 NHC seats. So selfishly, this is one of the better opportunities to qualify throughout the year if there ever was one.
Oh, I mean, and that's not selfish. It might be selfish, but it's also objective fact. So I have no problem with you saying that. And I would say if you're in this part of the country and you have any interest at all in the NHC, it's a terrific way to get your money in good and get there. And the prize pool goes way beyond just NHC seats. So check it all out, get involved. I would love to be there. I'm going to miss it for the first time in about 5 years, but I have a very good excuse with my brother getting married in Italy. So I don't know. I will get down there very soon. I'm not going to be at Pick Your Prize, unfortunately. Heck, maybe I'll get that down there as soon as this Saturday to check out these stakes races we're about to talk about. And it starts with race five, the John J. Riley. We got a field of seven going 6 furlongs on the Monmouth dirt. You have a strong opinion in this one, Brian?
I wouldn't say strong. I have two horses I'm looking at. So probably the horse to beat and the horse that I probably will try to beat that one with. Without seeing the morning line, I would have to think A Matter of Time is going to be the favorite in there. Switching back to Jason Service, kind of looks like, so New Farm is the owner of this horse, and they've been swapping him back and forth. He looks like he runs at Charlestown with Jeff Runco in the winter, and then he comes to Monmouth Park being a Jersey bred and runs with Jason Service in the summer. And last year that seemed to work quite well for this horse, who was 3 for 4 at Monmouth. The only non-win was a second place finish over the slop, so it was a perfect 3 for 3 over a fast track, all against Jersey breds here at Monmouth Park last year, culminating in the win in the Jersey Breeders Handicap, which is the biggest stakes race for sprinters for Jersey bred. So this horse, you know, certainly likes Monmouth Park. Having Jason Service be his conditioner is certainly no detriment, especially here at Mama. So I think that's the horse to beat. I'm interested by the horse just to that one's inside, Royal Earn, he is a Jersey bred, but running all of his races, you know, in Florida, mostly for trainer Michelle Nihay, who's here stabled at Mama's for the first time this year. Just if you go through a lot of kind of differences in this horse's running lines, you know, there's sloppy races going short, there's races long on the turf, there's a race in the jockey club at Churchill that's sloppy going two turns. So this horse has only run once sprinting on a fast main track. It was his debut down at Gulfstream, obviously against Open Company, and this horse won. So now against Jersey Breds, going to get a fast track, sprinting. I'm going to try for a minor upset here. They had to think that this horse was at least okay after, that maiden debut win down at Gulfstream. They shipped him right up to Churchill for the Grade 3 Iroquois. So they had to think that this horse has some talent and has run in 5 stakes races over his career. So it'd be interesting to see this one drop into State Bred Company for the first time and get a fast track.
I love that subtle class angle there for sure. You know, on raw numbers, you can see why Royal Earn is 6-1 on the morning line, which actually just came through, as opposed to A Matter of Time's 2-1. But as terrific as Service is, and as much as he wins at Monmouth, seems like he's not on one of his hot spells at the exact second. Maybe it's an interesting time to try to take him on with a horse like Royal Earn. I certainly like that idea. And I have to do a little bit more digging into that, but I like your angle for sure. The next stake race is on the grass. Looking ahead to the weather, it looks like we should, knock, be on the turf on Saturday. It's the Boiling Springs going 1 1/16 on the green for 3-year-old fillies. Always kind of an interesting division and one where chaos has been known to happen once in a while. How do you see this one playing out?
I see this as a great race. It's a field of 11 with one also eligible, so it should be a full field regardless. As you said, the weather, knock on wood, is supposed to be perfect this weekend, so it should be pristine racing conditions. And even if you just look at the trainers to start, in this race, Chad has two, Todd has two, Graham Motion, Bill Mott has one on the second page, Arno Delacour. I mean, this could easily be, a graded stakes race, and right now it's just a listed 75,000, but horses up and down have been coming out of big time races with big pedigrees and big connections. So a really, really tough race. You should get a price no matter where you look. I'm interested in kind of two horses. Ready to Tango is one, and then a horse more towards the outside, Karama, another. The one thing that I've kind of noticed so far in the first few days of the Monmouth Park season is speed on the turf has been doing really well. No real bias or anyway on the dirt course. Predominantly, I would say Monmouth Park is known you'd rather be closer to the pace than further off, and that's still true this year. But I wouldn't say it's playing too severely. But I have noticed that speed on the turf so far it has been doing quite well. So I was looking for horses to be a little bit closer to the pace in this race. And those were the two that I kind of landed on, a combination of Ready to Tango and Karama. Ready to Tango, I love Jose Lascano on the grass, really in any situation, especially in a situation like this when there's no clear pace setter, I don't think. So you're looking for one of those horses that might have some tactical speed who's going to end up on the lead. Usually Lascano likes to be aggressive coming out of three sprint races, the last two on dirt. Her debut was on turf down at Gulfstream. She ran a 78 buyer when finishing third that day, which was her best buyer by far, actually. She's kind of been going downhill on the dirt, even though she won last time. But from a figure standpoint, her turf race was her best. It's Todd Pletcher, obviously. And I think this one coming out of those sprint races and posted more towards the inside as opposed to Karama might end up on the lead. Karama, I mean, I didn't even have to look up the pedigree to know that this one is destined for turf. I mean, Kitten's Joy, obviously the sire, and then there's a bunch of horses that I can't even pronounce their names who are bred in Ireland. So that says turf, all over the place for me. She won her debut wire-to-wire at Gulfstream and was relatively close last time. So I think getting to turf and stretching out, she might be close to the pace too. They might even just be the best two horses in the race, putting aside their tactical position. So they were the two I was looking at. But, I mean, Chad Brown has two. The four-horse Claws won her debut first time out of Gulfstream and then was actually the favorite, was 8-5 last time out in the Grade 2 Appalachian at Keeneland. So this is a big drop in class for her. I think a lot of ways you can go. I'm going to go some combination of Ready to Tango and Karama.
Karama does look pretty darn interesting. I know what you mean about those Shadwell female families. Sometimes they definitely need a pronunciation guide. The time form pace projector actually has Karama clear, which I thought was interesting and definitely increases the amount that I want to look at her. And the last race, little trouble at the start and then sort of hustled up into numbers that were coded red on time form. I definitely think there's a lot of ability there. The 6-1 morning line and 5-1 on Ready to Tango. You got some square prices there, and definitely I think you've identified a couple of runners of real interest. But as you point out, there's a lot of different ways you could go in there. Definitely a pretty cool race from a betting perspective. And with that, we're going to move on to race 9, the Salvatore Mile. And we're going a mile on the dirt here, appropriately enough. We've got a field of 9. Morning line favorite is Sunny Ridge. Where did you land, Brian?
I landed towards the outside. Unlike the last turf race we just talked about, there's plenty of speed in this race. I mean, Jizum Jim is clearly, unless something happens at the gate, this horse is going to be in front, motoring right along. And then there's a couple horses elsewhere in here who should be pretty close. So I wanted a closer in here. I thought, even though he's been on the lead the last couple times, I thought Val Harbor was very interesting. Coming back here to Monmouth for Todd Pletcher, Joe Bravo, you know, any horse that Joe Bravo was on at Monmouth, you know, he moves up at least half a length just by having Joe Bravo on him. I'm sure Bravo could probably like outline every crevice of the Monmouth Park racing surface in his sleep. He just makes every right move here. Bell Harbor won the Sapling here back in 2007 in his only start here at Monmouth Park. And like I said, even though he's been closer to the pace the last few times, I'm looking at the race 4 back at Keeneland when he rallied from mid-pack. And then, like I said, even going back to the Sapling when he won from third or fourth position that day, there's no way he's getting close to the lead with some of the other speed horses in here. I think the outside draw, Bravo's going to settle him back a little bit. He's going to be in a good pouncing position and hopefully be moving up front of him. Diamond King was interesting too, for a use somewhere. Bell Harbor will probably be my bet, but I got to look at Diamond King's. I think he might be the best horse in the race. I'm just not sure what trip he's going to get being drawn inside. All of the other speed, Diamond King's a horse who likes to be close. You know, he set the pace in the Charlestown Classic last time. He sat just off of it at Gulfstream in his last two races of last year. In those grade threes, he set the pace. So I don't think he's certainly not a need the lead, and he's not going to get it. But if he's able to settle, maybe sit, you know, third or fourth, I think he might be the best horse in the race. But I'm going to try Bell Harbor with a closing victory, hopefully, in the Salvatore Mile.
Before we pass through this race entirely, I definitely want to put in a word for Sunny Ridge. I mentioned before about service and his form. You know, by this, the 9th race on the day, we'll see if he's right back in the midst of another hot streak. If he is, or honestly, even if he isn't, Sunny Ridge, I think, is one I wouldn't be too keen to leave off of tickets, just because, as you pointed out, with the speed signed on, looks like we might have the best closer with a fast pace here in Sunny Ridge. So I wouldn't be shocked to see some better things from that runner. And now we've got another graded stake back on the green stuff, the grade 2 Monmouth, going 9 panels and a field of 8 signed on. Almanar, your morning line favorite. Who's it going to be?
That is exactly who it's going to be. I've always liked this horse, Almanar. I think this race, everything about this race to me hits him right between the eyes. I love the distance for him. Last year was a weird year as a big fan of this horse. You know, I love this comeback race and the allowance race. I like the try in the Arlington Million. He ran great. I wasn't sure going in if a mile and a quarter was going to suit him, but he still ran a great race. Cutting him back to a mile, I never liked that distance for him. I thought it was too short. I always thought he was kind of a mile and a 16th, mile and an eighth kind of horse. So this is that. It's a mile and an eighth. He's always been a firm turf horse for me. You know, the last three races of last year, he didn't run any good in any of them. They're all listed as good turf courses. They all had some moisture in them. So I've had Almanar, like I said, being a fan of his, I've had him marked as kind of a middle distance, mile and a 16th, mile and an eighth, firm turf course horse. That's what he gets today. He gets Joe Bravo, which, as I said earlier, you know, moves him up. You know, Bravo on Bell Harbor probably moves him up half a length on the dirt. Bravo on the turf might move a horse up a length. He's unbelievable, whether it's, you know, cutting the corner or making the move at just the right time or dip in the stretch, he'll dip in to take advantage of the gap there. And again, he's unbelievable winning these races. It seems like he wins the United Nations every year. So I love the hometown Joe Bravo being on him. And it's Almanar for me, but it's certainly, I mean, this race is wide open too. The one horse, Monarch's Glen, looks really interesting to me. He looks exactly like the winner of the 2015 Mama Stakes, a horse named Triple Threat. who was making his U.S. debut for Bill Mott that day. Monarch Glen ran, I guess that's the day before the Oaks. So this is his second start in the U.S., but Lascano shipped in to ride Triple Threat in 2015. It was for Bill Mott. His European PPs looked very, very similar. This horse is a must-use for me as well. And so I'm already two horses in. I haven't even mentioned Synchrony, who basically dominated the Monmouth turf course last year. I do think it's interesting, though, that Bravo was on Almanar instead of Synchrony. Those three probably in that order for me. Almanar is going to be a big key on top. Like I said, I just think this race is exactly what he wants, really. He's going to get firm turf, the perfect distance, and Bravo. But I could also see a situation where I'm totally wrong, and one of the speed horses, you know, kind of takes advantage of a slow pace. As I said, speed has been playing well on the turf. Mark It Off could be that horse. He's kind of been on slow paces the last couple times. I'm hoping that a combination of Up the Ante and Irish Straight, who have been relatively close to the pace in their races, keep it honest and set it up for the closers. But all three of the horses that I mentioned, Monarch's Glen, Almanar, and Synchrony, they're all closers. So if a situation exists where, you know, Mark It Off is able to do what he did in the Muniz at Fairgrounds two back and just walk on an easy lead, it's going to be tough for the closers. But I'm hoping, as I said, that Up the Ante, Irish Straight, Keep Him Honest, and it sets it up for some of the closers, for me, led by Almanar.
I actually misspoke. So attracted to Almanar was I that I said he was the morning line favorite. It is actually Synchrony, who did have an excuse, I think, on that sort of odd playing Churchill turf back over Derby weekend. But for me, you've already made most of the points about Monarch's Glen. I'll just throw in a note about the trip. Kind of walked out of there last time, 7 wide, just really ran pretty darn well to be beaten only 3.5. If that 8-1 of the morning line, or even anything over 5-1, became a reality, I might key some stuff around Monarch's Glen being somewhere just from a value point of view. But it's a quartet of really interesting betting races and something that should really be on all of our listeners' radar when they're going through the form for Saturday's races. Anything else you're looking forward to this weekend out at Monmouth Park, Brian?
Oh, we got they're keeping me busy this weekend. So we got, like I said, we got Pick Your Prize pre-registration closing on Monday. We got the really good card. This is by far our best card of the year. We have 13 total races. This is race day 6, I guess it is, for us. You know, but by far this is our best card. It's a really, really good card. Best card actually I've seen this card in a very long time. And there's not, relatively speaking, there's not that much going on nationally. You know, we're kind of between Triple Crown races. So I would really, you know, if you're looking for something to play Saturday and the whole weekend, really give us a look. We're going to have some really good races. And if you're anywhere within driving distance, we have our biggest event of the year. The Jersey Shore Food Truck Festival is here Saturday, Sunday, Monday with over 40 food trucks. So,
nice.
They're keeping me nice and busy, but this is why we wake up every morning for weekends like this.
All right. Great stuff, Brian. Thank you very much for your time today. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin, of course, for his contributions to the show. Jake Ballas as well, of Black Type Thoroughbreds. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. You make the show so much fun to do. And hey, if you want to support us, support our partners like Brian and Jake. Good people doing great work in and around the game. We appreciate it very much. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. Do you like big fields and turf racing? Well, if you do, you should definitely be paying attention to what's going on north of the border with our friends at Woodbine. We're very proud to be partnering with Woodbine all summer long. We're going to be doing deep dives into a number of their races, as well as highlighting some of the big events like the Woodbine Mile Day Contest. Book your travel now. Great time to be in the city of Toronto. The film festival's going on. It's a great opportunity for contest players and just a lot of fun up there. And we're going to be having fun with them throughout the year. Special guests and deep analysis. Thank you so much for listening to the In the Money Players podcast, and we hope you support our new partners, Woodbine. For more information, check out woodbine.com.